This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swahib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Aid agencies say the full horror and impact of this cyclone, the worst to hit East Southern Africa in nearly a decade, will only emerge in the coming days.
That's reporter Lisa Schlein on the scope of Cyclone Idai's damage, details coming up. Also, countries around the world are laying the groundwork to initiate policy changes to tackle a global crisis of plastic pollution. And air crash investigators continue to process the data from the flight recorders of the Ethiopian Airlines jet. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the death toll from Cyclone Idai is expected to jump dramatically in three southern African countries as rescue workers reach areas cut off by flooding. While Mozambique has officially reported 84 deaths, President Filipe Nyusi says more than 1,000 people may have lost their lives and another 100,000 are under threat from flooding. Some have sought safety on roofs and on trees. Malawi has reported at least 56 deaths and estimates almost 83,000 displaced. Adigando gives us more on the situation in Zimbabwe, which says 89 people have died and hundreds are missing.
As in the other affected countries, Zimbabwe President Emmerson Mnangagwa has appealed for donations for victims.
To that end, I appeal to all communities and the interests in our nation and to all our development partners and the well-wishers to give a hand and to come forward with whatever forms of assistance they command and can mobilize in order to complement government efforts.
The threat of waterborne diseases and related epidemics looms large. Affected communities are still inaccessible for help. School teacher Simba Machikanga is one of the many currently marooned in Chimanimani.
The situation right now is tragic because right now people haven't yet got any aid. The helicopters actually passed through my area going to the most affected places, but they weren't carrying any sort of aid in the form of food or medical assistance. That people haven't yet received any food.
Officials say the weather is still hampering visibility, making air operations virtually impossible. Government officials say the country's civil protection unit is leading efforts to rescue and mitigate the situation on the ground, with the military clearing roads and making detours. Government spokesperson Nick Mangwana explains.
Now it means that we can get some aid through because the convoy that we had was stuck in this place, the convoy which was full of aid, medication, food and other supplies and provisions. I think that's the primary need.
He says all efforts are being channeled towards saving lives.
Issues of quantum are not important when we have people that are still not buried, when we have people that are still in a bad place, people that haven't been found.
The center of the cyclone wrought havoc in the eastern side of the country and also affected the southwest before moving toward the northeast, where the expert Julie Gwenzi with the University of Zimbabwe explains.
The moment it hit land, it was met with resistance because now we've got vegetation, we had all those mountains as well. They just provide friction to it. Then it started weakening. And right now, Idai is dissipated. We are no longer talking about a cyclone, but what we are actually now having to deal with are the after effects of Cyclone Idai, the flooded areas, the homesteads that have been destroyed.
Mnangagwa flew out this morning in a military helicopter to survey the damage. Opposition leader Nelson Chamisa says the government needs to work on disaster preparedness, saying the situation shows that the civil protection unit is ill-equipped to deal with such a catastrophe. On a positive note, Zimbabweans from all walks of life are coming together to assist with donations of needed materials. Getting them to the affected areas is the crucial challenge. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
United Nations and international aid agencies are rushing food, medicine and other emergency relief supplies to hundreds of survivors of tropical cyclone Idai, which, as reported, struck Mozambique, Malawi and Zimbabwe. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Aid agencies say the full horror and impact of this cyclone, the worst to hit East Southern Africa in nearly a decade, will only emerge in the coming days. Many areas of Mozambique remain cut off because of the floodwaters. This makes it difficult to provide assistance to the victims and to fully assess the damage and needs. There are no accurate figures on the number killed, but Mozambique's president said it would be as high as 1,000. A team from the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Society reached the Mozambican city of Beira on Monday. It describes the damage as massive and horrifying. It reports 90% of the buildings have been damaged or destroyed. IFRC spokesman Matthew Cochran says extensive flooding is causing enormous distress. He says the flooding in some parts is as deep as 6 meters, covering roofs, palm trees, and telephone poles.
The reports from the assessment that went out yesterday, which was government UN, were that people were huddled on rooftops, huddled in trees, desperately looking for someone to come and support them. Obviously, search and rescue is the major priority, but soon after that is shelter. Again, 400,000 people at least have been displaced or made homeless.
The Red Cross is issuing a $10 million flash appeal for emergency aid to the cyclone victims. The World Food Program reports it is rushing food and other assistance to large numbers of desperate people stranded by the rapidly rising floodwaters in Mozambique. It says the humanitarian emergency is getting bigger by the hour. The UN Children's Fund also is issuing a flash appeal for $23 million to help many of the 260,000 children affected by the disaster. The World Health Organization warns of looming waterborne diseases such as typhoid, cholera, diarrhea, and malaria from stagnant water. WHO says it is sending emergency kits, trauma kits, and cholera kits to take care of the immediate health needs of the people on the ground. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
United Nations officials say countries around the world are laying the groundwork to initiate policy changes to tackle a global crisis of plastic pollution. At a major UN meeting on the environment in Nairobi recently, member states agreed to cut single-use plastics by 2030. VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
After 5 days of talks in the Kenyan capital, environment ministers from more than 170 countries delivered a bold blueprint for change. Siim Kiisla is Estonia's environment minister and president of the 4th UN Environment Assembly.
I believe that this is the most ambitious declaration from UNEA, and there will be good results to build on. On single-use plastics products, as far as I know, it's the first universal commitment. So I am really happy for this.
He says the world is at a crossroads, but countries have decided to do things differently, from reducing dependence on single-use plastics to placing sustainability at the heart of future development. The ministers pledged to address environmental challenges with innovative solutions.
We need international commitments because waste disposal, marine littering, transboundary impact of lacking of sound waste management systems. It's an international problem. It cannot be dealt domestically. I hope that every minister, when they go back home, they don't forget about the commitment made here.
Some 4,700 delegates, including environment ministers, scientists, academics, business leaders, and environmental campaigners, met in Nairobi on 11th through 15th of March for the UN Assembly, the world's top environmental body, whose decisions will set the global agenda, notably ahead of the UN Climate Action Summit in September. Joyce Msuya is the UN Environment's Acting Executive Director.
Finding common ground is not simple. It's the product of cooperation, conversations, and compromise. The climate is warming, species are going extinct, natural resources are being wasted, and many of our ecosystems are under enormous stress.
as evidence mounts of the devastating effects of human activity on the health of the planet, a global clamor for swift action is rising. But campaigners said government's commitment on curbing plastic failed to urgently confront the ever-growing pollution crisis threatening the world's waterways, ecosystems, and health. Outside the UN complex, hundreds of students took to the streets as part of a global protest movement to pressure governments to act. Rebecca Freitag, a youth delegate from Germany, supported the protest call.
An issue that my generation is very much worried about is the plastic pollution. We have plastics everywhere. 80% of the plastic goes into the environment and will stay there forever. And we have to clean up this mess. So I want to see resolutions that are very ambitious and that do not only talk about waste management, but that rather take waste reduction as a priority. We have to redesign our future.
Campaigners at the meeting accused the United States of watering down earlier proposals backed by the European Union that urged governments to phase out single-use plastic products by 2025. Riley Walters, a student at Lehigh University in the United States, took part at the conference.
You know, especially in the United States, recent government, they've sort of been retracting a lot of previous environmental legislation, basically making it worse, taking away protections, like basically for the sake of economic profit, which I think is really unfortunate. And a lot of times, these big companies really influence our government a lot, and these are the companies that are polluting, and so they're able to influence our legislation to be anti-environment.
A key focus of the meeting was protecting oceans and fragile ecosystems. Ministers adopted a number of resolutions on marine plastic litter and microplastics. Experts say an average of 8 million tons of plastic waste ends up in the world's ocean every year. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda and the UN's World Food Program are investigating whether a food supplement used to fight malnutrition is responsible for a rash of suspected food poisoning cases. Uganda Ministry of Health said today at least 262 people in the northern Karamoja region have shown mental confusion, vomiting, headaches, high fever, and abdominal pain since March 12th after eating super cereal, a fortified porridge. Three have died so far. The food supplement, manufactured in Turkey, was distributed by the World Food Program to prevent malnutrition and stunted growth among children. Samples of the food are being tested in South Africa. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Eighteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The death toll from Cyclone Idai is expected to jump dramatically in three South African countries as rescue workers reach areas cut off by flooding. And countries around the world are laying the groundwork to initiate policy changes to tackle a global crisis of plastic pollution. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Tunisia is preparing for presidential and parliamentary elections at the end of the year, with many residents expressing frustration over a perceived inability of the political system to respond to their social and economic needs. Omzazine Khalifa, founder of Mabdoun Creative Youth, a social civil society organization in Tunisia, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the crucial need for economic development and the role of civil society in the democratic transition.
If we can't have and sustain a peaceful political transition while we're not solving the economic issues, and to remember the slogans of the revolution that were about jobs, freedom and dignity, my feeling is that we're not addressing the issues, that the youth who started the revolution, living and working in glass areas, are still marginalized and feel more left behind than ever. And this is definitely a threat to the transition, and not threat because it could become a threat to the stability, but because we are not addressing these issues, their pressing issues. And today, for me, the hope is that civil society can bridge the gap between the youth and the decision makers. Civil society can have the trust of the population, can go and propose recommendations for policymakers, for private sector, for other organizations who want to act locally to solve immediate issues, but also influence policies and actually conversation at the national level to really address the economic issues that they are talking about in a more longer term way.
Is Tunisia ready for presidential and parliamentary elections this year?
Tunisia has to fulfill the new free and fair cycle of elections, and 2019 is the rendezvous that every Tunisian is expecting. But for sure, Tunisia has the institution, the independent body for elections. So I don't know if political parties are ready yet. I don't know if they will have economic proposals that, to me, are much, much needed now. People to be listening to not only what is the vision for a new economic model in Tunisia, but how the political party that is going to win, or the coalition that is going to win, is going to implement these policies in an environment that seems to be stagnating right now. So hopefully these elections will show a real will and from political parties to change the status quo, and the conversations won't be about polarizing secular versus Islamist formations, because it was never why the revolution started.
You are a leader of Mubda'oun, which is a civil society in Tunisia. What role do you envision for civil society to bridge the gap between political parties?
Actually, the role that I see for civil society is to remain independent from the political parties and from the government, and to generally work in the gaps that are left out by the state. Civil society could be the ally of decision makers in pointing at the issues that are the least discussed, real immediate needs of the population. Mubda'oun works with youth living in working class areas. We are talking to them, we gain their trust, we have their ears, and we propose recommendations for policymakers, private sector, and civil society organizations. And I think it's our role to build this bridge between the marginalized population and the decision makers, so we can propose recommendations to change and improve the living condition of these population. So I think this is what Mubda'oun is doing, but we need to have a space for civil society to thrive. So that's why the independence of civil society is very important. And we are actually raising funds abroad that also raises questions. How can you provide the space for civil society to be independent and to help you in improving the society if you're not providing public funds for that and good oversight?
That was Amza Zin Khalifa, founder of a social civil society organization in Tunisia, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El Shenawi. Air crash investigators continue to process the data from the flight recorders of the Ethiopian Airlines jet that crashed last week, killing all 157 people aboard. The so-called black boxes are being analyzed in France, and investigators there say the data indicates similarities with the crash of a Lion Air jet in Indonesia last year. In both cases, the planes were relatively new Boeing 737 MAX 8 jets. One key element of the investigation is the comments made by the Ethiopian pilots as they tried to keep their plane in the air. It crashed moments after taking off from Addis Ababa on the way to Nairobi. In the United States, the Federal Department of Justice and the Department of Transportation are reported to be investigating the development and approval process for the 737 MAX 8 aircraft. Zimbabwe's tobacco auction floors open tomorrow and farmers are looking forward to selling their harvest. Reporter Kuzai Zinawashi speaks with the Tobacco Industry Marketing Board spokesperson, who gives an insight into this year's tobacco season.
Ishaune Sumoyo is the Tobacco Industry and Marketing Board spokesperson. He gives an insight on how the tobacco farming season has been.
Next week, Wednesday, the auction floors will be opening and the contract floors will be opening on the 21st. We've registered 30 contracting companies and 32 buyers for this season. And booking started on the 13th of March, and deliveries, we expect them to start coming in on Monday.
Moyo says farmers have been sending their estimated harvest. Compared to the past season, Moyo says it has been relatively smooth.
We had challenges with the late rains that we received. That was the major challenge for this season. But unlike the previous season where we had the potato virus Y affecting the crop, we didn't have that. And generally, we can say it's a good season.
Zimbabwe does not produce much to export, and the economy is in depression, which has resulted in fuel and medical shortages in the country due to foreign currency shortage. Yet tobacco remains one of the biggest foreign currency earners in the country. In the build-up to the opening of the auction floors, the central bank notified farmers that they will be getting part of their sales in foreign currency and the rest in the local currency called RTGS dollars. Moyo explains how this system would work.
With regards to the payment methods, farmers are going to get 50% of their money in their Nostro accounts and also the other 50% in RTGS accounts at the prevailing interbank rate.
Moyo adds that the foreign currency in the Nostro accounts should only be used to buy farming inputs as farmers prepare for the coming season. Farmers have mixed feelings towards the payment system, but they were initially told they would only get 30% of their payments in foreign currency, and the 50% is a compromise. That has resolved majority of the outcry. For VOA, this is Kuzai Zinawashi from Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swahib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Shogun Chang, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an exclusive interview with the Vice President of Malawi, Saulos Chilema. The Malayan politician and VOA's Shaka Sali discuss democracy and the upcoming elections. An in-depth look at Malawi's future on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey,
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.